Calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
The Ticket and Publix, where shopping is a pleasure, present the 5th Annual Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital Kids Love and Family Expo on Saturday, September 16th at the Museum of Discovery and Science in downtown Fort Lauderdale. It's featuring over 75 activities for kids, celebrity meet and greets, character photo ops, and more. It's sponsored by the law firm of Anajar & Levine. Accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. For tickets and more info, log on to theticketmiami.com. Alongside Greg Likens, I am Frito here. We'll take you to 10 o'clock. Grant Skidmore doing a great job. All right, so we were talking, Greg, going into the break about would you root against your team if your team was being no-hit? Would you root against your favorite? Is there any scenario where you would root against your favorite team? Now, it's different because your favorite team is your alma mater, Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a pro team loses enough, they can get a higher draft pick. That can't happen in college. You're a Cubs fan. Are they your favorite pro team?
Yes, I think that'd be fair to say.
Do you have an NFL team you root for?
Well, I mean, I've been down here so long, and I've been so closely associated with the Dolphins that, you know, I'm so Dolphin-centric that it would be the Dolphins.
All right, but we'll stick with the Cubs since that's your passion, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably more than any other team. You know, wouldn't you rather them get a, again, baseball draft picks are different because they take typically a long time to make the majors. An NFL draft pick, a hockey one even, certainly an NBA one, can make an immediate impact. You can see them from day one, and they can do very well. Baseball is a little different. But wouldn't you root for, say, the Cubs to get, say, the first pick in the draft than, say, the 10th pick? Again, there's not the passion for the draft in baseball that there is in other sports. But let's say you liked an NFL team,
mm-hmm.
and there was a big difference between, say, the number 4 pick and the number 1 pick. Look, I'm a Cowboys fan. I've loved them since I was a kid. I stuck with them when they were 1-15, when Troy Aikman. But a couple years ago, they stunk, and the season was lost. And I kept wanting them to lose and get a higher draft pick. They got the 4th pick, and oh yeah, they turned that into Zeke Elliott. So
that's right. Which
you
is
know, it was beneficial.
Been a game changer for them.
Right. So what, you know, look, if they were, I didn't give a damn if they won 6 games. I'd rather them win only 4 games, and they were 4-12 that year, and turn that into a higher draft pick.
I understand where you're coming from, Josh. I'm going to change the subject very quickly. We do have some breaking news via Ken Rosenthal, the Fox Sports baseball writer. He says, according to a source, Marlins pitcher Edinson Volquez needs Tommy John surgery.
Oh.
Issue is not simply his left knee. He's under contract for $13 million next season.
When we reported earlier that his knee is, because, and Mattingly told reporters today that a knee injury, which has kept on, his last start was July 5th, and a knee injury was going to keep him out the remainder of the season. And JT Riddle, the same thing, a shoulder injury, I believe shoulder, right? For Riddle.
Yes.
Was going to keep him out the rest of the year. And Mattingly revealed that to reporters today in his pregame meeting. But nowhere did we hear of an elbow injury at all. And Ken Rosenthal is as good as they come. If he says it, it's true. I firmly believe it. And so, look, he's essentially gone for next year. And they owe him $13
million. Right.
I mean, because, look, it varies for player to player, Greg, but I would bet that whenever he has it, you're probably not going to come back before 13 months from the time the surgery's made. You may get him at the very tail end of next year.
Right. Yeah, realistically, I mean, he's going to be out for most of next season. And even if he is okay for the tail end of next season, given the Marlins' history, they probably won't be in contention. What's the use of rushing him back? But this is already complicates what's been a bad situation for them. In the sense that,
wow,
you know, you got him under contract, but then I don't know. My assumption would be that he's not going to be around after next season, right?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, the only thing is, if he's coming back from Tommy John, let's say he's got a month to prove himself, no club is going to give him a boatload of money based on a month. He's going to have to sign a very low contract for 2019 to prove himself. And, you know, Grant, can you look up how old he is, Volquez? And
he's getting, so he'll have to sign a relatively cheap deal in order to, for him to try to get any kind of contract for 2020. They might be able to get him on the cheap.
That's true. So maybe, but in that case, I mean, they probably would want to be cautious with him at the end of next season.
Yeah.
But man, this is it's one thing after another for this Marlins organization.
Buy my club, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got a lot going for us.
$1.1 billion sold, okay, before it goes to $900 million.
Yeah, so anyway, I didn't mean to
That's a big deal.
Yeah, this is quite a development because, you know, when I saw that it was, you know, a knee injury for him, we all knew that that's what he was dealing with. But the fact of the matter is that now that we find out it's this, I mean, it's not just that it's a problem with his arm. It's that's like the worst thing you can hear if you are a team who has a pitcher with an injury, that it's Tommy John. Like, right. That's the last resort and worst scenario.
I remember when Jose Fernandez had it, he felt something in a start in San Diego. And we found out a few days later he's going to have Tommy John. I mean, so, you know, at the beginning of what was a very short, we now know, brilliant career. But here's the guy who just came on like a comet. And all of a sudden needed Tommy John. But he came back. I mean, you know, guys come back and potentially can throw harder than before they had Tommy John surgery. It's an amazing thing. People said that Frank Jobe, and people go, who the hell is that? He was the Dodgers doctor that really developed that procedure. You know, he had Tommy John who had it. He won 288 total games, more after the surgery than before. And people said he should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if he didn't develop that, how many guys' careers would have been over before they even were able to resurrect them?
It does beg the question, why is the surgery named after the player and not the doctor?
That's a good question.
Right? Like, I know that Tommy John underwent the surgery and was able to come back, but it's not like he did anything extraordinary. I mean,
the surgery was on him, though.
Right, but the doctor is the one who should deserve the credit. It should be named after, what do you say, Frank Jobe?
Yes, Frank Jobe.
It should be Frank Jobe surgery. That's what it should be.
I said the Heimlich maneuver, the Frank Jobe surgery.
That's right. That's very good. That's very good.
Like, he's the one who should get the credit for it, not Tommy John.
I've used this one before, and I'll credit George Carlin with it. Like, the other day I saw in the news about two planes that nearly collided, and they call it a near miss. Well, in fact, a near miss is when two planes collide. They almost missed, but not quite. If two planes almost collide, that's called a near hit. It should be. But they call it a near miss. It's a misnomer. And on that note, let's go to headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
We'll start with the breaking news in baseball. We were just discussing, as according to Ken Rosenthal and other reports, according to this, Marlins pitcher Edinson Volquez needs Tommy John surgery, as we had originally said that he was going to be out for the season due to knee problems, but apparently it is worse than that. And so this has since been confirmed. I see some of the local reporters are citing Mike Hill, who is saying that that is indeed the case, that Edinson Volquez needs Tommy John surgery. So we will continue with that in a moment. Yes,
and Tim Healy, who covers the Marlins for the Sun Sentinel, so this will be Volquez's second Tommy John surgery.
Well, that even adds more to this. So there you go. Potential.
And the surgery scheduled for Friday. Tentatively Friday, according to Mike Hill.
Okay, so there we go. Some breaking news still developing. We're getting more information. If we have more, we'll pass it on to you. As for the actual game on the field tonight, in the bottom of the fifth, the Nationals are doubling up the Marlins 6-3. It's been a strange one, as Max Scherzer got off to a hot start, not only with a shutout first inning, but also hit his first career home run, a three-run shot, but then had to leave while warming up in the next half inning, determined he couldn't go any further. And so since that time, the Marlins have tacked on three runs after it was a 6-0 lead. And right now it is 6-3, and we'll update you on that score as the night goes on. To college football, the season officially kicked off in Coral Gables this morning as the Miami Hurricanes open up their fall camp. Plenty of attention being paid to the quarterback battle, where Malik Rozier and Evan Sheriffs both worked with the first team today, while highly touted freshman Nikosi Perry worked with the second team. One injury note, according to Mark Richt, running back Robert Burns may not be ready for the season opener as he recovers from a shoulder issue. UM will be back to practice tomorrow. And finally, to the NFL, where the Dolphins had the day off but will return to the practice field tomorrow morning as well, and that will provide an update on running back Jay Ajayi's injury status. He left yesterday's session early and was being evaluated for a concussion, and those are your headlines.
We were wondering, you were saying, why isn't Tommy John surgery named after the surgeon, Frank Jobe? So one guy wrote in, And I said, how about a near miss? In fact, when two planes almost collide, it's a near hit. It's a misnomer. Some guy wrote in, pre-boarding is another one. How do you board before you board? That's a great one. And pre-recorded, same thing. That's redundant. I mean, pre-record, you know, if you record something, it's, but anyway, that's not.
Right, yeah. And I know this doesn't fall in line with this specifically, but as we're talking about airplanes and pre-boarding, did the airline companies just make up the word deplaning? Because you know what I mean? Like, that's very commonly used now, but I don't know if that was ever a real word that they just applied. I think it's just getting off a plane. Because planes haven't always been around. So they just came up with this word to deplane instead of saying just getting off the plane.
That's right. And you know, like, use your seat as a
flotation device.
If you're going in the water, unless you're on Chelsea Sullenberger's flight, guess what? You're not going to need them as a flotation device.
Right.
786-360-0790. So going back to our discussion, you can't envision rooting for your team to lose to, especially if a football team or a basketball team, to get a higher pick.
Well, I mean, I know that it was very, very popular during, you know, the different parts of the Dolphins' tenure the last 10, 15 years in which we're, you know, suck for luck. There were, you know, all these different campaigns to try to lose to get a better draft pick. So I understand that. But overall, though, it's not like I just think it just goes against everything that you would believe as a fan that if you go into, say, a Sunday Dolphins game, if the Dolphins are your favorite team, even if it would be advantageous for you in the future moving forward to lose and get a better draft position, I mean, how can you say that, say late in the season you're playing the Buffalo Bills twice within a few weeks, you're going to really root for the Bills to beat the Dolphins?
If it meant the Dolphins got the number one pick, absolutely.
No, well, look, I couldn't
because
do that.
If the season's already lost, but okay? I'm not talking about a season where you've got a chance to make the playoffs. I'm talking when it's there's the word, hopeless. When the situation is hopeless, yeah, here's what I'm doing. I'm sacrificing the short term for the benefit of the team long term. You're not willing to do that. I am. I'm not saying you're wrong. Everybody's got an opinion. There's no right or wrong here. It's your personal preference. But I'm willing to sacrifice the short term for the long term benefit of the team. And if that means getting a higher pick and there's clearly a better player, you know, at the very top of the draft, I'm doing it.
Well, see, I understand where you're coming from, but I also feel that that is clearly a fan's point of view.
Well, I'm not speaking as a talk show host. I'm speaking as a fan of my.
Right. No, I understand.
You said that, you know, as a fan of your favorite team.
Right. But I'm saying like the players and the coaches, you know, would never go into a game and say, hey, we want to lose in that specific situation. But I'm saying even as a fan, knowing that logic that you bring to the table and knowing that it's better for you long term, like if they're going into a game and the end of the NFL season these days is always against a division opponent.
Mm-hmm.
There's a built-in rivalry there.
Yep.
There's no way I can say, even if it's better long term, that I want them to lose to the Buffalo Bills, the New York Jets, or the New England Patriots.
Even if it meant that by losing, you would clinch, say, the top spot in the draft.
No, once game day comes and you're actually playing the game, I don't think you can say, all right, go Bills, or yeah, I hope Tyrod Taylor torches the Dolphins secondary, or whoever the heck's playing quarterback for the Jets has a big game, or Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who would probably be sitting out and taking that game off. Like, I don't think you can just turn it off and say, I want the Dolphins to lose to one of their division rivals.
Well, you look at what Grant brought up, and it's a great example, suck for luck. That went viral, so to speak. I mean, how many – now, teams would never lose on purpose. At least you never see a player do it because players can't deliberately play bad. I mean, no one could pay them enough money to do it probably because they make so much anyway. But two, if you're playing on a bad team, you're not only, as we said, playing to play for that team again, you're auditioning for every other team in the league. And
right.
If you deliberately throw down and play poorly, it's there on film. It's never leaving you. I'm not talking about players, but fans of many teams that the year luck came out in the draft of 2012 wanted their teams to do terrible in 2011 to try to get a crack at drafting Andrew Luck.
Yes, I know. That was common among all the bottom feeders in the National Football League that year, and I get it, but I just think it goes against every fiber of your being if you were a true passionate diehard fan in this case, if it's the Miami Dolphins, like, I just couldn't do it.
All right, let's put out to the listeners there. We'd like your phone calls on this. I mean, what you can text in at 67974, but I want to hear also your detailed explanation. 786-360-0790. Is there a scenario where you would root for your favorite team to lose, to go in there and actively say, yep, I want my favorite team to lose because this? Maybe it's because to get that higher draft pick. You know, in baseball, we were talking about witnessing history, but this might be even more relevant because you can get a great player or what you think is a great player if your team loses and you got a chance to draft that player. 786-360-0790. I think some of you are out there. Do you agree with Greg? Do you agree with me? We'll take your calls next right here on The Ticket. Fantasy football players, come to the Ticket's third annual Anajar and Levine John Clayton Fantasy Football Camp with special guest CBS Sportsline's Jamie Eisenberg. It's Saturday night, August 26th at the Sport of Kings at Gulfstream Park from 6 to 9 p.m. It's free and win some exclusive one-on-one time at lunch with John Clayton Saturday afternoon. Just register now at theticketmiami.com. Anajar and Levine accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. It's sponsored by East Coast Public Adjusters. Call 855-GET-ECPA or visit eastcoastpublicadjusters.com. Don't settle for less. And by Gun World of South Florida. Alongside Greg Likens, I am Frito. We will take you up until 10 o'clock. We were talking about scenarios in which you would root for your team to lose. Greg couldn't see doing that. He just couldn't root for his team to lose. Look, Dallas Cowboys are my favorite team. A couple years ago, their season was lost. They ended up at 4-12. They got the fourth pick. They turned that into Zeke Elliott. I've rooted for my teams to lose if the situation was hopeless. And this season is lost. And by losing, they could get a higher draft pick. I would do that. Now, one guy texted, as you said, Greg, to me during the break, we've gotten very good texts tonight. Here's one. Emotionally, I'll always want my team to win. But if they are in a position where something good can happen, excuse me, with the loss, and that loss occurs, intellectually, I can accept that.
Yeah, I see. I think that's a very accurate text in terms of the way my thought process would be as well, because
what's the difference when he said what I said? If the situation is hopeless.
No, because what he's saying is that emotionally you want your team to win. So you can still root for your team to win. But he says if the outcome goes the other way, then he can still have the feeling like, all right, well, maybe I didn't want them to lose, but I can understand the positive benefits moving forward. See, that's exactly the way I feel about it. Like, certainly, intellectually, you can understand the ramifications and how it can help you long term. But in the moment when you're watching your team play, you ignore that, and you still want them to win despite what could happen for the future.
You ever play fantasy football?
Of course.
Okay.
Come on, Fredo, you knew that answer.
No, but there's a reason I'm asking that. Have you ever now there's money at stake for you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever needed a player to do well, but it's against your favorite team? Let's say it's the Dolphins, all right?
Yes, it happens every year.
Well,
right?
So you're rooting against your favorite team?
Not necessarily. I think that you could spin it that way, but in reality, you're rooting for that person to have success while also hoping your team wins.
Okay, here's my line in the sand thing. End of the game, all right? You've got to root for, give me a running back. Marshawn Lynch. Let's say the
Raiders are playing.
Yeah, let's say a team in the East, okay? Give me a running back for LeSean McCoy.
Okay.
Okay? Dolphins are playing the Bills, final game of the season, all right? And you have McCoy. And if he scores a touchdown right there, two things happen. You win your fantasy football league finals, but it's the end of the game, and the Dolphins will lose that game, and the season's already over. You going to root for McCoy to score that touchdown?
That's a difficult one.
It is,
right? Because then you're pulled in two different directions.
Don't you love hypotheticals? You can bend them any way you want.
Yeah, I mean, in this scenario, you're saying for the Dolphins that what would be on the line for the
Nothing.
Dolphins?
Nothing. That's the last game of the season. They're not making the playoffs. Win or lose, they're not making the playoffs.
Well, then I guess, I don't know. That might be my line of the sand. I might have to root for McCoy to score the touchdown.
Now, it is tough, though, when it's the middle of the season, you've got to root for a guy, and he's playing your favorite team.
That's tough.
Because you know, I'm so invested in fantasy football. I don't want the Cowboys to lose by any means, but, you know, it's amazing how fantasy football can turn you around emotionally.
Well, like
financially.
So like for you as a Cowboys fan, if they're say they're playing the Giants and you have Odell Beckham Jr., then right, aren't you?
You want them to have a great game and the Cowboys win.
Right. Yeah.
You want them to like light up the scoreboard.
You're looking for that balance.
But Dak Prescott to Zeke Elliott, you know, 40 times.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, you might have found where I might swing a little bit, but yeah. Yeah, fantasy football, when you throw that in the mix, that that makes it even more difficult.
Another texter, great texter here. When local fans rooted for their team to lose, you remember, he said the UM Hurricanes fire Al Golden, mm-hmm. All right? Because they knew that it was likely that if they kept losing, Golden would be out of a job, and it turns out he was. What was he fired with? 3, 4, 5 games to go. And of course, now he's with the Lions. And, it, you know, they converted that into Mark Richt. But that was the time where Hurricanes fans, as in love with they were and are with their team, in their mind, it benefited them short-term, or long-term, I should say, if the Canes lost. They were long-term. Now, they didn't know they were going to get Richt. The Richt divorce from Georgia was just a gift from the football gods.
Right.
You know, they were talking about Butch Davis or... you know, bringing back some other guys, which never made sense to me. I mean, it, clearly to me, once Richt became available, he was the best choice of those available. Mario Cristobal, I was completely against. You know, if he's that good, why isn't anybody else hiring him?
Right.
He wasn't good at FIU. He's been an assistant with Saban for a long time, now moving primarily, as you say, into a recruiting coordinator, which is a critical job with any college football team. But people would say, oh, no, bring back Mario. Well, you're only saying that because of his connection to the school. If he's that good a coach, why hasn't somebody snatched him up yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's, in fairness, I mean, FIU had some good years with him, and he did, I thought, a nice job with the program, but the last few years prior to him being let go, you know, they struggled again. So I'm with you on that. But Mark Richt, I think that was one of the more surprising coaching changes that we had seen. Like Georgia was consistently a 10-win team.
He was, you know, he's there 15 years and they suddenly decided that's it.
And it was just one of those scenarios where I guess the program thought, hey, we national championship or bust, right? I mean, hey, who's gonna fault whether it be Mark Richt or anybody else in that conference and not being able to beat Nick Saban at a certain juncture? So yeah, that was a tough one, but you're right, it really worked to the benefit of the University of Miami. I am looking at a couple of these other text messages that we have coming in here. Somebody says, I wanted the Heat to tank this season and was all for the suck for luck. It's like sacrificing a pawn in chess to get an advantage. Yeah, I understand. That's certainly not something, again, that's it goes against the way I would handle things, but I understand the logic behind it. Somebody else here says, same reason I don't play fantasy football. I cannot see myself rooting for another team's player. It's a conflict of interest. So how about that? We have one of our texters says flat out he or she does not play fantasy football because he or she does not want to root against their favorite NFL team.
Look, I understand that. I do. But, I, you know, I love fantasy football. At times you have to make that decision. What's more important?
Well, right. And also I would say this, that as much as I enjoy the NFL, fantasy football makes it much more enjoyable. I mean, outside of – so if you're a Cowboys fan, Josh, you'll watch the Cowboys game. But, you know, maybe the rest of the NFL schedule for the weekend isn't as interesting to you outside of following the standings and stuff. But if you have fantasy football at play, then you have interest in a lot of the games throughout the weekend. It just makes it more entertaining. And it can be heartbreaking on one end, or it can be very joyful experience on the other.
You know, you know, if I once said, if you could somehow eliminate gambling, you know, and I mean, football is the king of sports, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the ratings are just huge. But if you somehow were able to eliminate gambling, that interest would just tank. Football is a great sport, and a lot of diehard people will still watch football. But it's the other ones that aren't the diehards that watch the NFL. Those eyeballs watch the NFL on one platform or another because they're betting on the game in one form or another.
And are you considering fantasy football gambling?
Oh, absolutely. No, the NFL can disguise it any way they want. It is absolutely gambling. And they say, oh, we don't want to be associated with gamblers. You put on your own league website fantasy football stats. Don't tell me you sit there and don't support gambling when you you're promoting it. You can call it anything you want, but you, Roger Goodell, absolutely promote gambling. Fantasy football is a multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, it is, but if you examine the way, especially daily fantasy sports, the FanDuels, the DraftKings of the world, at least in a number of states across our country, they've determined that it's a game of chance, or excuse me, a game of skill, and not a game of chance in which gambling is. So I would say to you that if we're talking about gambling by the definition of gambling, even if they took that away, things would still thrive because you would have fantasy football. But if you're saying take away gambling and fantasy football...
Well, I put them all in the same umbrella.
Okay. Because some would put a dividing line between those two and say that while there's a gray area, that they're different. But I'm with you. It would take a hit, no doubt about it, because there are a lot of fringe fans, a lot of casual fans who are more interested in watching all these games and providing monster ratings to, you know, the various platforms, CBS, Fox, sure, NBC, ESPN, because of fantasy football.
All right, 786-360-0790. Let's go to George in Miami. Hi, George.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
I was listening to the conversation you were talking about the coaches, and you mentioned about Mario Cristobal. You know, you said that he failed at FIU.
Well, I didn't have an exact record in front of me if I was wrong on that, but I just remember he was fired from there.
And I'll tell you why, because you see, Mario Cristobal took over a program where every year the football team was rising from 1AA to Division 1A. They were always in a transition change every year. So, you know, the competition kept getting better every year, and the recruiting wasn't all there. So,
well, wasn't he fired? He took over for Don Strzok, right, after the fight with UM?
Right, exactly. But the thing is that every year the competition was getting better because they kept changing, and they weren't consistent staying on a level playing field where they could have competed for more championships and so forth. So,
well,
you know, they were changing every year. They were changing different schedules, different teams. That's what happened. So
I guess my
Cristobal took over a team that went 0-12 the year before, and they won one game. And that was the same year they played UM and Penn State. And then the following year, they get to two bowl games. Okay. You know, so.
Well, my point was a lot of people were pushing for coaches, in my opinion, that didn't deserve the UM job. People were pushing for Mario Cristobal because he went to the school. Whereas if you just simply.
Well, he's a very good recruiter. And I mean, I thought he would have been a decent fit myself because, I mean, he's
then
a great
why?
Recruiter. And, you know, he's had experience now under Nick Saban. And you know, and he had been in rumors and talks for to be in having other coaching jobs available. And again, the only reason why he got tossed from FIU that year was because he fielded other offers.
Well, hang on, hey, George, places, George, take a breath.
And they were forced to
George.
Give him an extension.
All right, goodbye, George. Take a breath. This is gonna be a dialogue, okay? If he's that good, why hasn't any other school hired him? Nobody has. He's free. You know, look, he's the recruiting coordinator. He's done a great job. Alabama gets great recruits every year, although I think they could get great recruits if you and I were the recruiting coordinator. But why hasn't anybody hired him if he's that good? My point was that these UM fans were wanted all these UM alums or people with UM connections to be hired, when in fact, if you just blindly showed them the resume, they didn't see a name, they didn't know that that person had a connection to UM in any way, shape, or form, they wouldn't want them as coach. Richt was the exception. Richt had a great record at Georgia, all right? And consistently, year after year, they were a competitive team. And so when he got divorced, UM was very, very quick in pursuing him. And I give UM a lot of credit for doing that.
By the way, we have a complete update on this situation because I was mistaken on this, and I didn't realize this, but Mario Cristobal left Alabama.
When?
And joined the Oregon coaching staff this offseason, which I
did not hear that.
I either forgot about it or was unaware of, but I just Google searched him. And, he left Alabama for Oregon in January and decided, because Willie Taggart took over as the head coach at Oregon once they made the move there. And he is now, I guess, the top assistant there under him at the University
What's
of Oregon.
What's his title? Is it like assistant head coach?
I believe so. I'm taking a look here. He joined him earlier this offseason. So he is now at Oregon.
Wow. Okay, well.
Not as a head coach, but as a top assistant and a big-time recruiter.
Yeah, someone said Cristobal is now the offensive coordinator. Wow. Well, I didn't know that.
So anyway, just not that everybody down here is following everything that Mario Cristobal is doing, but at least to update that.
Now, here's someone who agrees with you. And again, there's no right or wrong to this. It's just your personal opinion. He was referring, he didn't say it, but he's referring to his fantasy football team. He says anytime a player, a player on his fantasy football team is facing the Dolphins, he's going to the bench that week. No ifs, ands, or buts. Boy, if you have last year, for instance, if you had Le'Veon Bell, who didn't have a good game against the Dolphins, but the guy is just, Antonio Brown, again, who against the Dolphins didn't have a good game, but the guy's just an absolute monster on the football field. I could never see, even if I had Antonio Brown and he's facing the Cowboys, I'm playing him.
Right.
Particularly the Cowboys, this team, their defense stinks, man.
I mean,
I might as well clean up.
But if you're talking about one of the elite players at their position, I mean,
Zeke Elliott is going to go high in this year's draft.
Yeah, that'd be difficult. I mean, I appreciate what our texter is saying there, but that would be a difficult decision to make. Real quickly to update the Marlins score.
Sure.
I know we were making fun of them earlier in the night just because they got off to such a slow start.
The Nationals leading, what, 6-0?
6-0. It is now 7-6 Marlins.
Really?
They've come all the way back from the 6-0 hole. Ozuna had a 3-run homer in the fifth, and then also in the fifth inning, Derek Dietrich had an RBI triple. And so now it is 7-6. Marlins have made the comeback complete. Obviously, they benefited from the fact that Max Scherzer only lasted one inning because of the neck spasms, but just to update everybody on that.
There you go. A second pitcher hit his first career homer. Scherzer did it. He's been in the league, 10 years now? He hit his first career homer, and we're watching, you and I are Cubs fans, John Lester had come close. He'd never hit his first career homer, and he did, and right now after three innings, Cubs lead the Diamondbacks 8-1. So he hit his first career one. I'm sure he surprises anybody.
Yeah, and the good thing about this scenario for John Lester and the Cubs is that he came back out and is now pitching again, unlike Max Scherzer, who hits a home run and then is like, all right, I'm done.
I don't know if you heard our show earlier, but Max Scherzer, as Greg said, in the top of the second inning, hit a 3-run homer, his first career homer. They eventually get retired. He comes out, throws one warm-up pitch, and then says, signals to Dusty, I can't go. And no one knew. For a few minutes, we were scouring Twitter. Greg and I were, and Grant was back there. And we finally got an update that a national spokesman said he had neck spasms. He slept on it in a funny way, his neck. And finally, it was too much for him. And so after you could see him wincing in the dugout after he hit his homer. Mm-hmm. And so he couldn't go. Look, if you're Max Scherzer, your team's in first place. Like that, you don't want to take a chance either. If you feel an impingement in your neck, just get out of there for a while and sacrifice the start.
Right, and they made the wise choice. Unfortunately for the Nationals, great for the Marlins. That has opened up an opportunity, and the Marlins have taken advantage now with that 7-6 lead.
Yeah, they have a 14-game lead over the Marlins.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not going to be a really big blow to them if they end up losing this game, but I think, as you pointed out, Scherzer's long-term health is going to be the real concern.
Yeah, it's right now their magic number against the Marlins is 45 going into this game. I guess you can probably start counting magic numbers then.
Yeah, I think so.
So, all right, earlier in the evening, we had on Barry Jackson. He covered UM's first practice today and wrote a lot about it. If you want to read it, FLA Sports Buzz is his Twitter handle. And he gave us a lot of good information. We played some sound from Mark Richt earlier. So coming up next here on 790 The Ticket, we're going to replay that interview they did with Barry Jackson, and we'll play that next right here on The Ticket. The Machine is back at it. Guns N' Roses is coming to Marlins Park on August 8th with the rock spectacle of 2017, the Not In This Lifetime Tour, and The Ticket is giving you a chance to be there. Join us inside Lilt Lounge at the Epic Hotel in downtown Miami on Saturday, August 5th. From 8 to 10 p.m., where we will be giving away 7 pairs of Guns N' Roses tickets, including 2 pairs of premium tickets that come with a night stay at the Epic Hotel. For more information on the Epic Hotel Concert Series packages, visit epichotel.com. Guns N' Roses Not In This Lifetime Tour is coming to Marlins Park, and we're giving you a chance to be there on AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2, The Ticket. All right, tomorrow night from 7 to 10, Barry Jackson will be my co-host tonight. He is our guest. He joins us right now on the Orion Fuels and Downstairs Convenience Stores guest line. They're truly steps beyond convenient. Barry, before we get into UM, I'm going to throw a weird question at you. Because Perk and I and Curtis and Greg were trying to think of a player that was on the Heat. It might have been a guard for about a day or two, was acquired, and then traded away almost immediately. within the last 2 or 3 years. Does that ring any bells in your mind?
Yes. Well, there was a point guard that the Heat traded, Brian Roberts.
Brian Roberts?
He was with the team, yeah, for a day, and then ultimately ended up with Portland. He's been with Charlotte as well. So it's funny. He came out and made comments to us as if he was going to be a long-term member of the Heat. And of hours he was dealt. That has to be the shortest 10. You know, it's funny. I thought of the point guard. I believe his name was Brian Roberts. I want to check on that for sure. He's been a veteran NBA point guard. Yeah, Brian.
It is. Yep.
Yeah, good.
Perk Brian is Roberts. Right now driving off the road.
In regards to Scaramucci.
Yeah. Well, that's what
I was thinking of short 10 years of players.
That's what we're going to talk about. So don't say any more names. We're going to talk about this on the show later. That got us thinking about this. So right now, Perk, don't text saying that's it, okay? Well, he's listening to us right now driving home, but now he's got the answer. Greg and I were talking. You were out at UM practice today, and Greg and I were talking about right now Malik Rozier, Evan Sheriffs. They took the first team snaps today. Nicosi Perry, the second team. You know, that's according to Mark Richt. At some point, we think Nicosi Perry is going to slide into that starter's job. If everything was equal, would you rather him slide in after that Florida State game rather than they throw him into the deep end too soon?
No, if everything is equal, I want Perry to develop immediately, get a game under his belt against Bethune-Cookman, then play at Arkansas State, which will obviously be slightly more difficult than Bethune-Cookman, but not an ultimate test either because it's not a Power 5 opponent. To me, if Perry is every bit as good as Sheriffs and Rozier, you have to start the kid because he's your long-term future and you got to invest in him. Now, multiple players have indicated over the summer that they believe that he is the front runner for the job based on athletic ability, based on what they've seen in voluntary workouts. Now, all that being said, he's got to convince Mark Richt that he knows the offense, that when Manny Diaz's defense throws various things at him in practice, that he's able to decipher defenses, to be able to pick up blitzes, to be able to make the right call at the line. And most importantly, to know the playbook backward and forward. So these are all things that really could not be clear to teammates during informal 7-on-7 drills in the summer when all you're doing is throwing the ball around. So all of these things have to be determined over the next couple of weeks. And there's one other factor, too, and that's the simple exercise, guys, of the center quarterback exchange, which apparently gave Nicosi Perry problems today. Chris Herndon, the starting tight end, said that he fumbled a few times. So after practice, Mark Richt grabbed the ball and a center, and he ran through some extra snap exchanges with Perry at the far end of the field just to give him more practice at that. So my suspicion is it will either be Perry or Rozier. Sheriffs did not do a lot to impress me in the limited time I was able to watch this spring. Of course, most practices weren't open, but feedback I got on Sheriffs was that he just wasn't very impressive. Now, he was, because of the size, able to see over the line better than Rozier. He's substantially taller than Malik, so that's one advantage. He is occasionally able to get the ball in tight holes, but generally the thing with Sheriffs is that his arm is not great and his accuracy is erratic.
Hey, Barry, considering that the Miami Hurricanes have been picked to finish atop the Coastal Division in the ACC, so they've got a lot of talent on that roster, despite the uncertainty at quarterback. Based on that, where's that balance between all the talent kind of overcoming the uncertainty of the quarterback position in terms of what they need to get, whether it's Rozier, Sheriffs, or Perry who starts over the course of the season?
I think merely average quarterback play would be enough to get them to 8 or 9 wins. But if they want to be a top 15 program and win 10 or more this year, they're going to have to get, superior quarterback play. And I think it's anybody's guess whether they're capable of getting that. Everywhere else, they're either good or excellent. I would say the positions of concern would be defensive tackle behind your top three. They've suffered some attrition there. Cortell Jenkins was thrown off the team. Gerald Willis taking a leave of absence for personal reasons. They will have trouble at running back if Mark Walton gets any sort of injury. Travis Homer's a very good number two from all indications, but they have very little depth behind him, and their only freshman running back, Robert Burns, is not going to be ready for the opener. He's never been a durable player in high school. Now he has a shoulder problem. So those would be the two areas of concern, depth at running back and defensive tackle. And they need to figure out left guard and center. There's competition at both of those spots. Other than that, though, I think they're very good everywhere.
I'm not talking about defensive end. I mean, they have a nice problem to have. How do you divide up the time between several great, really good starting caliber defensive ends?
Right. That's going to be a challenge for Craig Kulagowski, the defensive line coach, who's regarded by some as the best college D-line coach in America, and Manny Diaz. Chad Thomas emerged last year a bit. He's always going to be compared to Joey Bosa as a guy coming out of high schools in Dade and Broward who has never been anything close to what Bosa was at Ohio State and then obviously with the Chargers. Chad has had a nice career but not a five-star caliber career. But he is an NFL prospect, and he can rise this year from sixth rounder to potentially much more if he has a good year. You've got the two Jacksons, no relation to me, Joe Jackson and Demetrius Jackson, two quality young ends. You've got Trent Harris, who's a glue guy who does a lot of things well. So you've got four quality starting ends, and then you've got two really interesting freshman ends coming in. John Garvin, a kid from Palm Beach County, who had just enormous sack numbers in Palm Beach high schools. And then Deontay Johnson, a kid that UM was somehow able to pry from Sacramento, who had more offers than any player in the country last year. He's reported to have received 100 offers. He just arrived in July. So that's six right there. Plus Scott Patchen, who played only six snaps last year because of knee issues. But as Manny Diaz joked to me, six very good snaps. So he's got seven defensive ends to share time with. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's a terrific problem to have. Barry, Amon Richards, Mark Walton, the headliners at the skill positions on offense, but in your opinion, who has a chance or the best chance to break out on that side of the ball?
I would say Richards already has done so. As far as young players, I would keep an eye on Jeff Thomas. Someone at UM told me that of all the players UM signed in February, Rick was most excited about Jeff Thomas. He is a speedy wide receiver from East St. Louis, Illinois. The skill that he has that's special that UM hasn't had a lot of in recent years is elusiveness after the catch. He's got a second gear after he catches the ball. Not a big kid at all, but very fast, shifty. So I would keep an eye on him in the slot. And then I think Travis Homer, as Mark Walton's primary backup, is going to impress people. People knew that Travis Homer coming out of high school down here in South Florida was a fast kid, but he also has a toughness to him. He was able to break tackles in the spring, according to people who watched closed practices this spring. So I would say those two kids keep an eye on. Everyone wants Deontay Mullins, a ballyhooed receiver, to take the next step. He was okay in the spring, tailed off at the end, but their two weapons offensively will still primarily be Walton at running back, who is an NFL prospect, you know, and people will talk about whether he'll turn pro after this year, and Amon Richards, who cannot turn pro for another 2 years. So at least they'll have Richards for two more years. Braxton Berrios, I think, is the other receiver guy that's worth mentioning because he's a veteran guy, their best route runner, didn't play a ton offensively last year. Teammates have said he should play more. He was very good in the bowl game. He's elusive after the catch. He's really smart, and he knows how to get open.
Barry, Mark Richt, when he was up on ESPN's campus and going through the car wash of interviews, at one point he did say, the U is back. And, you know, I don't know how seriously he said that, but if you're looking at his tenure here with the program, and I know that there's been many years the fans have been hoping that the U gets back to where it was, and I don't know how realistic it is for them to go on such a long streak of winning like we saw in the late 90s, early 2000s, but What needs to happen, in your opinion, for us to agree with that statement?
Well, they need the type of recruiting class that they have in line to get next year to happen over several years. At the moment, they have the number one or number two recruiting class in the country. Some have Ohio State slightly ahead of them. What they need is that year after year to be able to get back to the level, you know, the great UM teams or the level that Alabama is at now or that Clemson and Florida State have been at times, certainly over the last decade. Well, as far as whether the U is back now, they're certainly not back to what they were during their years of dominance, but they are potentially back this year in terms of being a top 15 caliber program if the quarterback play is good. If the quarterback play is average, then to me they're a fringe top 25 team, you know, possibly top 20 at the far end of the top 20, but they're not back yet in the traditional conception of UM being back
which to me means 11, 12 wins competing for national title.
Right. Yeah, certainly a high standard that, you know, just the history within the program has set for itself. And it's an exciting time of the year now with the Hurricanes practicing. The Dolphins will return to practice tomorrow. I did want to ask you about what transpired yesterday at Dolphins practice. I think it was fun for the fans, for the media, for the players to have the full pads, the live tackling. However, it appears that Jay Ajayi may have sustained a concussion. And, you know, Adam Gase spoke about that risk-reward scenario that he was faced with, where he feels they need to get the tackling experience in practice, but he knows that there's an injury risk there. What'd you think about that in terms of Adam Gase's decision to have that transpire yesterday?
I think all of your players have to have some tackling during camp, but I think you have to be very judicious with your best players. To me, I wouldn't give Ajayi more than just two or three carries in all of preseason, just because he's so valuable to you. You know, so I'd be very cautious with him in particular because of the lack of depth behind him. Look, Kenyon Drake can be, you know, a nice piece on offense, but there's no evidence we have yet that he can be a guy who can carry the ball 20 times if Ajayi's not there. So that's why, you know, as my colleague Armando Salguero has noted, he believes the Dolphins are exploring signing a veteran back just to have in place in the event that Ajayi is ever injured and misses a lot of games. There aren't a lot of options left. You know, D'Angelo Williams is certainly one guy who's still out there. But I would say with your handful of top players, you have to be very careful about exposing them to tackling and to live action during preseason because it's just not worth it.
You've got talent along those lines. I want to expand on that because you've got talented, as you say, backup running backs, Damian Williams, Kenyon Drake. And I read what Armando wrote on his blog. Were the Dolphins perhaps delinquent and not, I'm not saying anticipating a Ajayi injury, but as an insurance policy to bring in before now, and they haven't signed anybody as far as we know, but maybe earlier in the year, signing an experienced backup just in case something happened to Ajayi?
Yeah, I do not think so, Josh. I think the area where they were delinquent, where I really think they've miscalculated, is a defensive tackle behind Sue and Phillips. And we say behind Phillips without even knowing that Jordan Phillips can be an above-average NFL starter. But what they're throwing out now at backup defensive tackle is not good enough. And that's no slight against, you know, Godcho and Vincent Taylor, but they're fifth and sixth round picks. There's no realistic expectation of them coming in and being able to provide 20 to 25 quality snaps a game, which is basically what you need from your number three D tackle. That's what Earl Mitchell was supposed to give you last year. And then Nick Williams is playing on the second team at D tackle. He's a journeyman who Pittsburgh ran over in the playoff game. To me, that's where they've been delinquent, not signing a veteran number three defensive tackle who could push Jordan Phillips and can be counted on to play 20 to 30 times a game. Snaps a game. And I think that is something they will have to address in mid to late August. And if they aren't able to come up with a quality piece, then they're going to regret it. Someone inside the Dolphins had said it won't necessarily be a waiver wire pickup. It could be, you know, someone like a Roy Miller or a Dan Williams or a send Eric Marks. They mentioned it could be a trade as well. That to me is the area they've been most delinquent. And the one area you could question would be, should they assign Zach Brown, Pro Bowl linebacker last year and now obviously with the Redskins, played
for just a couple million bucks, right? I mean, not very much.
Exactly. He would have signed here, I think, for the $4 to $5 million range, which is cap space they have now. That decision obviously was called into question again last week with Koemisi being placed on IR. To me, it's a good decision that you didn't sign him. If Raekwon McMillan is great, if Raekwon McMillan doesn't have a very good rookie year and certainly isn't good early, then you have every right to question them not signing Zach Brown.
You know, Jordan Phillips came out of Oklahoma. This is his third year, right? And he came out with a reputation of a guy who takes off plays. And when we talked to him during minicamp, and I know you were there, Barry, he came out to the podium and he said, "I'm a different guy. I've learned," I'm paraphrasing here, "basically, I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to do that anymore." You know what? He's one of the guys. Fine, talk the talk, but let me see you walk the walk. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. And nothing against him, but I don't believe it until I actually see it with my own eyes that he's going to just give it his all the time. Because he can say that, but at least in his first 2 years, it's all evidence to the contrary.
Right. And, Josh, please stop fumbling. Please stop jumping off sides. He's had at least three offsides penalties so far in the first 5 days of camp. I looked it up. He had nine penalties last year, which ranked 22nd in the league. Sue was right behind him with eight penalties, and Sue normally is a double-figure penalty guy. So stop jumping off sides, for starters. Now, his work against the run, most of it without pads, has been decent so far. There haven't been a lot of holes for the running backs to run through. But obviously the true test will be, once the regular season starts, can he give you 35 snaps a game that are high quality, where he's not going to wear down, where he's actually going to be at least above average for the majority of those 35 snaps.
Okay, Barry, I'm going to go off topic for a minute on our way out, because some guy earlier in the show, before you came on, wrote in, he texted in the show. He said, Frito, I'm near Philly and about to go for a cheesesteak. I heard Jim Steaks is on the spot. Do you have any opinions? And I wrote back, I was in Philly once. I have no idea about any restaurants. That was like 30 years ago, or cheesesteak places. So one guy wrote back, he goes, Barry knows everything. Maybe he has a Philly cheesesteak location suggestion for the previous texter. You used to cover the Heat, so you used to travel to Philly. Any cheesesteak recommendations from the Herald's Barry Jackson?
Yes, I have two recommendations for Philly. Reading Terminal is a really fun place to go. It's right downtown where you can get any kind of food you want. There are about 30 food stands. There are also, you know, supermarket-type items as well, but there are about 30 standalone restaurants. And there's a nice restaurant downtown that has a bunch of things like comfort food, including cheesesteaks, called Jones. So those would be the two suggestions. Reading Terminal, which would require walking around, or Jones, which is a sit-down place.
How did I know you would know this? This is just,
I think it's
great.
It's so random, isn't it?
It's great. Hey, thanks a lot so much. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you tomorrow night. You'll be on with me from 7 to 10.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Take care.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
All right. Our thanks to Barry Jackson for coming on. He'll be my co-host tomorrow night from 7 to 10. Greg, thanks. Great job. Appreciate all you did here. Grant Skidmore, terrific job by you. I'm Josh Friedman. Coming up next, ESPN Radio.